All right, I am going to call the
Recording in progress.
The July 2026 Mental Health Board meeting to order. If we can start with a roll call, please.
Den Aros.
Here.
Alejandro Gomez. Tony Nichols. Molly McClay.
Here.
Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Jen Straub.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim. Jane Sprandel.
Here. All right. Welcome everyone. We will start with an approval of the agenda. At this time, Madam Canfield, do you have any adjustments to the
Thank you for giving me a second to get it on the screen, which, oh my gosh, suddenly, did you do that? Wow, it's some kind of miracle. Okay, there's the agenda. It's like four pages. I have no changes to offer.
If there are no changes to the agenda, would anyone like to make a motion?
I move to accept the agenda as written.
Second that motion.
Thank you. If there are no other statements, I just need all those in approval say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. All right. The agenda is approved. In your packet, you will find the schedules and timelines with our hand. No.
There are links. Yeah.
As I misspoke, I was about to say in the agenda you'll find with the lovely little links. So that is wonderful. So that not only does it have the mental health board stuff, it also has the DD board. And the next item would be acronyms and glossaries. Those two have their own wonderful link for your viewing pleasure. All right, moving on to public participation or agency input. At this time, I don't see anyone in the audience, so I doubt there is anything on the clipboard of anyone who'd like to address the board. So is there anyone on Zoom who would like to address the board this evening?
It doesn't look like it. No raised hands.
Oh, Jim Hamilton.
That might be, yeah.
Sorry, Jim, it's just the mouse.
It's because there's like a note that says this meeting is being transcribed, and yeah, okay. It was a little hand trying to pull it down.
I believe I am being set up to fail on my first meeting tonight as the Mental Health Board Chair. Okay, so if no public input at this time, we will move on to the chairperson's comments, which would be me, Jane Sprandel. I will keep them quick and brief. Number one, thank you to everyone who has already taken the organizational health survey, assessment survey. That link was sent to everyone on Wednesday the 15th, I believe, from Lynn. If you haven't done it, you have till the end of the month. If you're like, what are you talking about? Maybe get with Lynn in case it went to your spam or something. But again, I think it says it takes 10 to 15 minutes, and that's about what it took me. It was pretty insightful. Also, I'd like to thank any of the board members or staff that have already done or will be doing your interview for the organizational health assessment. Those are really our opportunity to share, you know, what we know, what we feel, and things that will help bring our boards and our group to be bigger and better in the future. Couple just housekeeping things. Again, you know, meetings start at 5:45. I know we've had problems in the past. People are like, wow, these meetings take too long. They do. So I'm going to try to always start at 5:45. I'll try to be respectful of everyone's time and start that. So hopefully we can keep it moving. But with that said, if I keep it moving too fast, be like, Jane, I have something to say. I will always try to make sure no one has something to add, but I'm not good with silence. I don't like quiet. So I might move on. So please stop me if I ever do that. If you're going to miss a meeting, as always, let Lynn or myself know, just so we always have a quorum. I would hate for people to come in and us find out we don't have a quorum, because then, you know, you kind of made a trip for nothing. And then study sessions, you know, there's a lot of work and time that go into them. So, you know, also try to prioritize those. I know it's hard on the months we have two meetings. We try not to have study sessions per se, besides when we're doing grant things, but let's just try to always be in attendance for study sessions also. And that's something too, if you feel like we're doing too many study sessions or the topics are not relevant, you know, let Lynn, myself, someone knows so that we can kind of curtail those. So that's all I have at this time. So I will turn it over to Lynn with her executive director comments.
Thank you, Jane. You got it. It's going good so far. I was going to defer comments, but I'll just say that there are great snacks today from Bake Lab. Yay. And then I did, over the weekend, I attended the NACO, National Association of Counties, board meetings. They had, there was like a board forum on Saturday and then a long business meeting on Sunday. And that was my last meeting as a member of the NACO board, because I'm there as a liaison for NACBID, the National Association of County Behavioral Health Directors. But it has been really interesting. It's like apparently like has a reputation as the largest board in the country. It's like over 200 people serve on the NACO board of directors, which is kind of ridiculous. But the information that they provide is so good. It's kind of beyond what I've learned at regular NACO sessions over the years. And the most interesting piece that I want to share with you now, I mean, I think we talk a lot about potential threats and changes to federal policy and funding and regulatory structures. We talk about that. We talk about real changes, but it is almost always just potential changes. But a theme that they keep bringing up at these sessions is how difficult it is to get to help people understand what local governments actually do. Like, we just don't have the kind of audiences that Joe Rogan can pull, you know, even if we have like really great social media people and who are updating stuff. Like, it's, you know, this board is quite familiar with that. We're sort of trapped between like the budgetary constraints of technology and staffing for really great marketing, and then the legal constraints of record retention and what you can say. So a really great and scary example of this is that across the country, you may have heard Ohio is one. States talking about completely abolishing property taxes. So, right? So the NACO director has been going around meeting with the proponents of these bills and finding these are not coming from legislators. I mean, I just assumed it was legislators trying to look good, trying to save lots of money for their constituents. These are coming from special interest groups. And he said when he starts to explain to them what counties do, their eyes get really wide and they're like clearly sorry they've gone down this road, and they'll say things like, well, we would just really want to only fund the sheriff's departments. And then he can say, do you know how expensive sheriff's departments are? And he can show them data. So that's really good work that NACO is doing, and they're huge and they have a huge board, but like really we are up against some big machines. And so I think if you all have ever, you know, worried about how hard it is to get our messages out, I had just I just felt so relieved that we're not alone. And putting it in perspective, people don't even understand where money comes from to fund the sheriff's departments and how expensive those are. So anyway, that was a really helpful takeaway. There's a lot more that I learned, but, you know, it can wait. And there's a lot on the agenda tonight, so that's it.
All right. Very good. Thank you. So we can now move on to the approval of the board minutes. They can be found on pages 5 through 14. And I believe we just have one meeting's worth of minutes to approve tonight.
Also, for Stephanie and other Zoom attendees, Dr. Joachim is here. So just so we'll remember him at roll call time.
I will go ahead and move to approve the minutes of the CCMHB May 27, 2026 meeting.
Second.
All right. Thank you. With a motion and a second, if we can have a roll call, please. Since we did not amend them, we will not do a roll call. Thank you.
Yeah.
We will move on to vendor invoice list.
You still have to approve them.
Okay.
Just by
all
a
those
voice.
Okay. All right. All those in approval say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. And then vendor invoice list can be found on pages 15 through 20.
Hey, Lynn, could someone from staff explain what was the mattress for?
Funny enough, this question already came up today. So I'm really proud of y'all for noticing that. I've told you for years and years and years that the Special Initiatives Fund also holds a very small trust fund for an individual, but they haven't accessed it in maybe 4 years. So you would not remember seeing a charge like this ever. And the purpose of this trust fund is to help an individual who lives in a community-based small group home, not here, but he's from here, and they tried to serve him here, but he did better in a different one of their group homes. And so this is just for equipment that he might need in that home and just didn't need anything for the last 4 or 5 years. And so now a new mattress, which, yay. And this is the person receiving the reimbursement is one of the two approved recipients of it. We're the trustee, but so we still have to okay it or not, but they provided good documentation. So, and this means that we are about $1,200, less than $1,200 away from that trust fund being completely used up, which is nice because then the Special Initiatives Fund doesn't have to administer it anymore.
Any other questions on the invoices?
Now, what is the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank?
That's the credit card.
Oh, okay. It was the J.P. Morgan that, if you know.
You know, and this doesn't show you exactly what we purchased on that credit card, but I can get that information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just couldn't identify.
Yeah.
J.P. Morgan, you know, if you'd said Visa, I could have. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the kind of things that we end up putting on there will be like so we try to follow the county policy as closely as possible, and that county policy really sort of discourages the use of the credit card for anything at all. So it might be like equipment that we couldn't purchase a different way. I think that's probably what this is, because I had IT build us a physical server. We have been using a cloud server for a while, and I'm kind of not trusting that anymore. So now we have a physical server with hard drives, which were very hard to get, and we had to purchase individually. So without checking, I'm going to guess that this is a couple of the hard drives. So, but it could be all kinds of equipment like that. So.
All right. Anyone with anything else? If not, we'll just need a motion, please.
I move to accept the vendor invoice list and place them on file.
Second.
All right, Stephanie, I have a question. So in the back of my mind, if it's money, you always have to ask for roll call. But because this has already been paid, we do not. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay, excellent. So all those in favor of approving the vendor invoices as presented, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. All right, so starting with old business, tonight we're supposed to have our evaluation capacity building project annual report. I'm assuming she's doing that online.
She's here.
Oh, there she snuck in. All right. The floor is all yours, madam.
Yes, Dr. Dariotis.
Dr. Dariotis is magical and can be in two places at once. Even three sometimes, right? Do you want to control the presentation or do you want me to?
I can do that.
Okay.
And I also have a video to show because who doesn't want to see a micro learning? Happy hump day. I'm a little late, so maybe you already said that, but trying to represent. So I'm going to talk with you about a couple of things this evening. I'm going to first show you a micro learning, and then I will update you on some of our activities, and then we'll go through the presentation of our year three report. So strap yourselves in, get ready for the ride. So the micro learning is about how to use Microsoft and Google Forms to create one's own survey in a low cost, highly scalable way. So I'm going to be showing our about 10 minute video so that you can see what it's like and take some notes in case you want to create your own surveys with these forms. And disclaimer, we get no money from Microsoft or Google.
Today we're going to talk about using Microsoft and Google Forms as tools to collect your program's data. And so this microlearning is appropriate for agencies that might not have access to an expensive survey platform, or for agencies where people in charge of evaluation are out providing direct services and don't spend as much time at their computers. As a quick disclaimer, the Family Resiliency Center is not affiliated with Google or Microsoft. We just think these are useful tools for agencies to use. Before we get started, I want to share a little bit about survey data collection. Surveys can help us answer questions like, are people satisfied with the quality of services? To what extent is the programming achieving its target goals? How do people describe their experience with the program? Standalone survey software such as Qualtrics or RedCap can be really expensive and sometimes difficult to learn how to use. Your team may opt to use paper surveys instead, but this may mean that a staff member needs to create a database and hand enter data. This can be capacity limited and introduce an added hiccup of incorrectly entering data. Google and Microsoft Forms offer a free and relatively user-friendly option to collect data and review the data all in one place. This microlearning walks through programming a survey in each platform. We're going to discuss Microsoft Forms first. So if your team uses Google, you can fast forward through this part. So first, we need to get to the site. You can type in forms.microsoft.com and log in with your Microsoft credentials. If you use Outlook with your agency, it's likely the same username and password combination. At the top of the screen, you should see a clickable icon that says New Form. This is the main interface you will use to create your survey. On the top of the screen, you will see Untitled Form. You can click there to add in your own survey title. Next, you may want to create an introduction to the survey for the person meant to complete the survey. To do this, you can click in the field below the title to write this text. It might say, Dear Agency Program Participant, we need your feedback about this program and whatever other information you think is important for them to know, such as how long it might take or that their response won't influence their ability to get services. Now we're ready to start adding our questions. You may use the Quick Start With feature to add your first question. You'll see options including choice, text, rating, date, ranking, Likert, upload file, net promoter score, and section. Options we see used a lot include Choice, Text, and Likert, so we'll share a little bit about that here. You can also use the PDF tutorials that were created to go with this video. Choice provides a list of responses for the respondent to choose from. You can also click the Multiple Answers button and specify Check All that apply in your question. This may be appropriate for race and ethnicity questions, for example. The next option is Text. Text allows for someone to type their own words. This option is good for open-ended questions. For example, you could ask, what are some ways our team could improve the program? And then finally, Likert questions let people respond to statements on a scale. So for example, rate how much you agree with the following statement, where 1 means strongly disagree and 5 is strongly agree. Another feature that Microsoft Forms includes is branching. This means that participants will be directed to a different section based on how they answer a question. For example, you could add different sections for new and existing participants. In this example, you could ask someone if they are a new or existing participant, and based on how they respond, the survey will take them to the appropriate section. You can access this function when you click on the question box and click on the 3 dots in the bottom right corner. This feature may not work for every type of question. And then once you finish programming the survey, you can preview your work. To do this, click on the preview button at the top right of the screen. This lets you see what the recipient will see, and you can edit accordingly. And depending on your goals for the survey, you may also want to edit survey settings. You can see your options by clicking on the settings button at the top right of the form next to the gear icon. This lets you decide settings like who can respond, whether you want people to be able to respond twice, and if you want to be notified about surveys being completed. Once you're happy with the questions and settings, you can collect responses. To start this step, click on Collect Responses at the top right of the screen. Here, you will also have the opportunity to make setting decisions. You can either share a link, add someone's name, download a QR code, or copy an HTML tag for embedding the survey into your website. Now you're ready to collect survey data using Microsoft Forms. Let's do the same process using Google Forms. First, we need to get to the site. You can type in forms.google.com and log in with your Google credentials. If you use Google with your agency, it's likely the same username and password combination. At the top of the screen, you should see a clickable icon that says blank form. So go ahead and click on that. This is the main interface you will use to create your survey. On the top of the screen, you will see Untitled Form. You can click there to add in your own survey title. Next, you may want to create an introduction to the survey for the person meant to complete the survey. To do this, you can click in the field below the title that says Form Description to write this text. It might say, "Dear Agency Program Participant, we need your feedback about the program, and whatever other information you think is important for them to know, such as how long it might take or that their responses won't influence their ability to get services." And now we're ready to start adding questions. When you click on the first question, it may have automatically created a multiple choice option, but you can change this by clicking the menu in the top right of the question box. You'll see options such as short answer, paragraph, multiple choice, checkboxes, dropdown, file upload, linear scale, rating, multiple choice grid, checkbox grid, date, and time. Options that we see used a lot include multiple choice, short answer, or paragraph, and multiple choice grid, so we'll share a little bit more about that here. You can also use the PDF tutorials that we've created to go with this video. Multiple choice provides a list of responses for the respondent to choose from. You can also click the Multiple Answers button and specify Check All that apply in your question. This may be appropriate for race and ethnicity questions, for example. Short answer or paragraph allow for someone to type their own words. This option is good for open-ended questions. For example, you could ask, what are some ways our team could improve the program? Multiple choice grid questions let people respond to statements on a scale. For example, rate how much you agree with the following statement, where 1 is strongly disagree and 5 is strongly agree. I'll show you briefly how this works. In the rows, you enter your statements, and in your columns, you enter your response options. When you go to add a new question, you'll see that this turns into a grid. Another feature that Google Forms offers includes is something called Go to Section Based on Answer. This means that participants will be directed to a different section based on how they answer a question. For example, you could add different sections for new and existing participants. In this example, you could ask someone if they are a new or existing participant, and based on how they respond, the survey takes them to the appropriate section. You can access this function when you click on the question box and click on the three dots in the bottom right corner. This feature may not work for every type of question. Once you've finished programming the survey, you can preview your work. To do this, click on the button that looks like an eye at the top right of the screen. This lets you see what the recipient will see, and you can edit accordingly. Depending on your goals for the survey, you may also want to edit survey settings. You can see your options by clicking on the Settings button at the top center of the form. This lets you decide settings like whether to collect email addresses or limiting each participant to one response. Once you're happy with the questions and settings, you can collect responses. To start this step, publish your survey at the top right of the screen. Once it's published, you'll have the option to manage who can respond and copy the link to share with participants. Now you're ready to collect survey data using Google Forms. Once you start collecting survey data, you will be able to monitor the responses using these same systems so everything is in one place. And as a reminder, you can access possible survey measures accessible on Google Drive. Thanks for watching.
So I'll pause there and see if there's any feedback on our microlearning. Yes.
One thing I've always wondered when I fill out survey forms, whether it's by Google or like a Microsoft form, is what does it look like to the person who displays the or does the survey? Kind of like, I know forms sometimes has pie charts for certain things, but it looks like every question can be different. So I kind of wanted to see what that looked like. Or no, I don't have to see necessarily. Yeah. But.
So you mean like how do the results come out? So you can select different types of reports and things like that within the forms. Cool. So it really can be tailored. And great that you said this is because in the future we were talking even today with our working group, plug for anyone who wants to join our working group, is talking about data visualization. And about storytelling with data visualization. And so going through and finding out ways of, do you use a pie chart? Do you use a bar chart? How are you telling your story? How do you get the data out? What does that look like? So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So on June 23rd, we conducted an in-person training on evaluation plans, which, as you probably know or maybe don't know, has a lot of different sections. It can include a logic model, an overview of your program, how you're going to collect data, and so forth. And so at the end of that, we had over 30 people participate. We actually had to bring in extra chairs, and we partnered with the agency council meeting, which I think really was helpful in getting additional people to join us that day. And then we had an add-on if anyone wanted to learn about how to use these forms and surveys. So then we anyone who wanted to stay and get some assistance with creating forms could do so. And so we showed the microlearning and also helped them through with some of their forms. And in our technical assistance, we've also been empowering agencies to use the forms to program in their own surveys when they don't have other software to do so. Yeah. So great. So I think there's a comment. If Brenda wants to show...
I would ask that maybe the audience wait for the board chair to ask for their questions and comments, if that's okay. That's sort of protocol.
Okay.
So does anyone have any questions currently? I know that we usually get monthly updates, so we've been pretty abreast on what all you have been doing with our agencies. So does anyone have anything to ask?
I just wanted to comment on the microlearning because I think it is really helpful to, you know, I think a lot of times when people think about surveys, they think they have to like get some sort of special program and like SurveyMonkey, RedCap, those things are out there a lot of times affiliated with academic institutions, but like Google Forms and Microsoft are, they're both things that a lot of agencies and businesses have access to. And I didn't actually even realize that you could do forms in Microsoft. I'm more of a Google girl myself, but that I think it's just really helpful for people to recognize, like, you actually have pretty robust tools like available at your disposal, and having somebody like walk through, this is how you do each part. Cause I remember in my old job, when I was learning how to make Google Forms, I like had to go through all those steps mentally, but it was like by myself. So like being able to watch something, I probably would have gotten it way more quickly if I had had a video like that. So thank you.
And as was mentioned in the video, we do have a PDF of if someone likes to see it visually as well, instead of following through with the video or having it next to it, as a guide with those screenshots for them to utilize. All right, well, I will move on to our presentation. So we want to give gratitude. I always start presentations with gratitude because if you leave it to the end and time runs out, you don't give gratitude. And I think it's really important to give gratitude to the agency staff and leaders who have been part of this process with us for now 3 years and in our year three, and provided their time and energy and doing all the great work that they are doing. And our working group members who give us feedback before we launch things, making sure that they're relevant, that they speak to agencies and participants. So we are really grateful for our working group members for going through this process and journey with us so that we can hear their voices and make sure it's tailored to their needs. The board members and staff who have been nothing but supportive in thinking about what we're doing, making sure that it's relevant and it's useful. Program participating in technical assistance. So we had 3 programs last year participating in technical assistance, moving forward in their work. And then funding, obviously, from the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Boards. We're really appreciative for the funding to make this work happen and to bring things to scale for different agencies and to bring it to not just these agencies, but to publicly disseminate it so that others can utilize these resources as well. So as an overview context, we're revisiting project goals and strategies in year three. So we're having continuity with our previous project goals and our strategies. I'm going to talk about revisiting year one needs assessment and those takeaways to show that we're still working with that and meeting those needs, giving a summary of year three's activities and then next steps for the following year. So some context, obviously we are about capacity building, which means empowering others to do the work for themselves with some assistance as needed and really partnering rather than doing 2 and 4, really doing with and by the agencies. So our project goal, the overarching goal, is to build that evaluation capacity for Mental Health and Developmental Disability Board funded agencies using participatory and empowerment approaches. So, like I said, bringing voice into it for participatory and then building that capacity so that it can be done by others and at low cost. Not a lot of agencies can necessarily fund getting an external evaluator, and so by building those capacities, it's really important that they can collect their own data and can demonstrate their outcomes and also improvements that might be needed as they have continuous quality improvement. So our year one goal was to determine agency and board needs, strengths, and expectations for the evaluation team, our future activities, and then to begin moving that into action. Year two was to use those year one needs assessment findings and ongoing feedback and to engage in that relevant capacity building activities with the agencies and programs. And then year three is to continue that successful and relevant initiatives and implement any new ones that would meet evolving needs in real time for these agencies. So what do I mean by participatory? That's really centering staff voices and having multiple perspectives in what we're doing, which provides a more holistic understanding of not only their current capacity, but also what has worked in the past and what needs still remain, so that they can actually be the ones that give voice to that, and we can make sure it's relevant and tailored to their needs. And empowerment is that capacity building, so making sure that they can implement the strategies and sustain those strategies. So it's not a one and done, but they can actually use that as institutional knowledge for their organization, spread that information, and also access our resources in real time whenever they need them, particularly from our microlearnings. So I bring this picture up. I do it every year because I really like this picture, where we're not at the helicopter science, which is doing 2 and 4 people, but really partnering with and having agencies, programs, doing the work by themselves and also with us in partnership as we're scaffolding them to meet their needs and to build that capacity. This is a diagram, which I also show every year, about empowerment evaluation. So how do you build capacity? One way is by creating tools. Another is by creating trainings. Another is by providing technical assistance. And another one is by quality assurance and continuous quality improvement. And so within this project, we're doing all 4 of those. So the tools like the microlearnings, our PDFs, the updated measures repository that was referenced in the microlearning that's accessible to anyone whenever they need it, the training workshops that we have done in person on outcomes and different measures, the technical assistance that we do with selected programs, and the quality improvement and assurance that we've been doing through our working group sessions and our monthly board meetings, maintaining open communication with the board staff and having check-in meetings. So in our year 1 needs assessment, we identified agency and board strengths and growth areas in program evaluation. Agencies wanted to be heard, so it tells us that we're on the right track with our participatory approach. They want resources, so providing that knowledge, creating efficiencies. They have very few members on their staff in some of them, and so really creating those efficiencies is really helpful. And then also storytelling proficiencies, because if you have the data and you have the information but you can't tell the story, that's going to be really hard for moving the work forward. And also as part of that story, thinking about how can they continue to move their great work forward and evolve as it needs to. So our summary of year 2 and year 3 activities, we've done technical assistance, as you know, so tailored supports for different programs based on their evaluation needs. So we meet with them, we find out what it is they need. We don't tell them what they need, but we assess that, and then we work from where they're at to getting to them to where they need to be. In the working group, we meet with them. We were meeting with them twice monthly, and for the summer, we've been meeting with them monthly, and that's really creating that cross-agency mentoring and that rapid feedback to us to make sure that what we're doing is on par or if we need to do a course correction and change directions. So it's been really great, and we're hoping to move that into a community of practice that's larger over time and really being interagency collaboration and scaffolding each other with our assistance more on the back end. Trainings and resources, as you know, with all the microlearnings and the repositories and everything that we've been doing in terms of those trainings in person, as well as on demand whenever anyone needs them. And then open communication and informal support, being consistent in our communication about progress and planned activities and our ability and availability for any questions, including office hours, which we started this year towards the end of the year. So in terms of technical assistance, we reached 3 programs that were identified with staff input for their need to develop evaluation capacity. They were less experienced in evaluation this year than in past years, which I think is really important because we're not only reaching those who have had some evaluation experience, we're actually reaching those who really are starting sometimes from zero in some of their evaluation or close to it. Improved understanding of logic models, survey development, and survey administration, depending on the agencies and programs. And then they reach over 5,700 clients. So even though we directly didn't touch that many clients, the work that we're doing has the potential to impact them. And so we like to demonstrate all of the people that they're actually reaching. So the effect is that all evaluation survey responses from our 3 agencies reported that they will use the skills in the future to improve their services and program quality assessment, and that they would recommend technical assistance to others. So yay, everyone, if you hear that, and we reach out about technical assistance in the future, others, your peers, are suggesting it would be a good thing to participate with us. Here's a diagram to show for some of the agencies or programs how we went through the process. So we start off with a kickoff meeting to meet and greet and build rapport, because that's very important, and assessing where they currently are. Then thinking about going through a logic model, what are they wanting to achieve, what are the resources that they are currently given, what are the outcomes that they're currently measuring or not measuring, data collection and helping them think that through and having practical ways of doing that that meet the needs of their clients, reviewing the outcome measures just to make sure they're still relevant and they're linked to their goals, doing survey development, and then data collection. So as you can see, we stopped at data collection for a lot of these agencies, and that is in part because they started at a level that they didn't have as much of a background, and we'd still made tremendous progress with them over the whole year. So as one of the peers or agency staff members reported, I'm very appreciative of Rachel and the Family Resiliency Center in general for helping us improve our services. I have nothing but positive things to say, and I will happily recommend you to others. Thank you. So cross-agency working group. So we work with four different agencies, three core members meeting regularly, like I said, twice a month, feedback on trainings, helping to troubleshoot when they're running into difficulties. Even if they're not technical assistance programs, they still get support from us through this process. And then they learn about evaluation as well. The effect is that we get rapid feedback, so we're not waiting until the following year when we do the next needs assessment. We're really keeping our pulse on what are the evolving needs. They have shared knowledge amongst each other and can learn from each other. They build a community. They've improved their confidence and value of evaluation and its importance, and then also promoting their own survey design skills. So one of our working group members said, I have learned a lot from the working group. I wish I would have had it when I first started. I have worked on some different surveys, and I've learned a lot about how to make them. I'm not a data person. I'm a people person. But I have learned a lot from the data I've collected. They have helped me look at program and understand to what to change or fix. That makes a big difference. You guys have made it easier for me to understand my job. Also, another working group member said the content and resources that have come out of the group work will be very beneficial to agencies who are willing to use it. So they are freely available on the website. We've administered the links through the newsletter from the board, and any way, shape, or form we can give the information, including in the board packets. So our training and resources, we had a storytelling workshop this year as well. We had 12 agencies represented, publicly available on our website. We had three new microlearnings total, one that had avoiding the data dump, so just dumping the data and not explaining it, avoiding under and over reporting, so only reporting certain things and not other things, and just giving permission to report everything because it's all helpful information for improving programs and improving lives. And then how to program a survey using those low-cost, highly scalable platforms. Eight microlearnings to date have been created, and nearly 5,000 player impressions and over 300 plays, which is actually tremendous when you think about we only started creating these microlearnings last year and that we are reaching so many different people. And reference guides in case people want to use a visual different from videos. So we're trying to get as many different learners and different modalities as possible. So the effect is that the resources are broadly shared across funded agencies and other agencies by other funders. So we've heard from other funders locally and through networks that they are actually sharing these microlearnings with other people. So if you're a visual person, I'm going to talk about these two graphs. So on the left side here, these are our player impressions. So this is our potential reach. And in year two, we were approaching 2,000. And by year three, we're at almost 5,000, which is tremendous. And we've increased our microlearnings from 6 in year one to 8 in year two and 8 in year three. And one of our most recent ones was only submitted right before the report was due. So it didn't get as many views, and I'm expecting that to go up in the next year. when you look at the actual plays of people playing it, this is showing that we had almost 200 plays in year two with our six, and then approaching 325 or higher in year three with the eight. So from a board member from the Developmental Disability Boards talked about, I just love what you're doing. I taught research methodology for years at the university, and I would have very much benefited from some of these short micro lessons. People get so distracted by how and what to report, and you have really distilled it into a humorous as well as cogent summary. So really hoping that people will access them and not cry and laugh instead and utilize them. So. We heard the message in year one, and we're trying to deliver on making it fun and accessible. So open communication and informal support. We do monthly updates with the board meetings. As you know, we're here every month, and monthly progress meetings with board staff. We listen if there are suggestions of what we should be doing that we're not doing, something that we're not doing that we should be doing. So we really take that feedback into account and want to make sure it's rapid. And so that's why we really want to have open communication and consistent availability. We've offered office hours. And I have to say, nobody has taken us up on the office hours. But I also think it might be people don't know what they don't know. Or they need the help at midnight when they're trying to put something in. Those are my theories. But we did collect some data on that in our June 23rd in-person session to say, what is it that would help have you partake in office hours? So we're working through that, and hopefully people will take us up on it. So real-time support if you need it. The effect is increased cross-communication, and then our annual report offers a public accountability and understanding of our activities. So our next step, ideas for year four, is identifying funded programs, needing in-depth technical assistance, developing new trainings, like I talked about with data visualization and some others that we have heard, not only from year one needs assessment, but consistently and across time with evolving needs. And evolving our working group into more of a community of practice, and then assess our office hours for specific and quick needs and how to promote that if it is a need and how to pivot if it is not a need. And that's my presentation. I open it up for questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Does anyone have any questions or need any clarifications on anything she has shared?
So you said that you were doing, I think, a survey to see what would make people want to go to office hours. When was the date that you said that you were going to start that?
So we actually did it during the June 23rd session so that we could get the information from 30 people at once. And so we're combing through those data, and that will be not only in our next report next year, but we're acting on that to say, you know, maybe it's more of finding out what are some small topics that people are needing and making it tips and tricks instead of an office hours. Because I think some people might be, you know, also hesitant to say, I need help, or I don't know what I need. And so we're trying to make sure that we are reducing any of those barriers.
Awesome. Kind of like frequently asked questions.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that.
Yes, but a tips and tricks might be more of a selling point, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's more your personality, you know, like do that. I like that.
Yes, a frequently asked questions, but not too long of a laundry list because no one will read through it, but like little snippets, you know.
Accessible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. I have a question. Yeah, I like the report very much, very, very clear. But I was just wondering if you have noticed any problem with retention rate, like people, agencies starting and, you know, disappearing, not continuing, and if that is at all something to look at or a problem.
Well, I would say for the technical assistance, we have spent a lot of time building rapport mm-hmm. and trust with the agencies, and for the most part, they are receptive. I would say that they're so busy, some of them.
Yeah.
And it's not for a lack of our trying or a lack of their desire, but just the competing demands.
Yeah.
But we continuously reach out. We make sure that we have met the deliverables and what they've needed. We reach out even after the year is done to say, is there anything else that you need? Mm-hmm. And actually, one of the agencies wants to continue with us for another year. Because, like I said, starting at a lower capacity level, it might need additional time for them to actually put into practice the actual data collection and then seeing it through data visualization and other things. So we're considering doing that in consultation with the board staff.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say for the most part, well, for all of the agencies that we've seen over the last 3 years, it's not a lack of desire or willingness to do it. It's probably more of a competing demands and skeleton crews, for lack of a better term.
And so. Probably staff turnover, too. Yeah.
And that's why we're trying to create these tools. Mm-hmm. So, like, the evaluation plan. They came, and sometimes with their teams, like a couple of people from their team, so that they can all learn how to do it. And then they come up with the plan. Mm-hmm. And then if someone were to move on to their next adventure, then there is still the plan there that they can work from, in addition to all of the microlearnings and other things. So that's our hope. Our in-person trainings aren't necessarily something that someone can access in the future, but if we give resources to those are accessible. And those are mostly on topics related to our microlearnings that need an in-depth and are better administered in person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, great question.
Anyone else? Lynn has a question.
Dr. Dariotis mentioned that she's working with board staff on that last question. And I felt strongly, I think the rest of the team maybe agreed with me that organization especially would be a good one to do for 2 years. It's a developmental disabilities focused agency, but they actually are so consumer focused and so serious about matching outcomes to what people are looking for in their services. And then they also communicate broadly about that. So I thought that would actually be good for all of us if they really got it and they were really able to tell everybody else how to do it. So I had a little bit of an ulterior motive with continuing that one. So anyway, that's it.
All right. Well, thank you for all of your wonderful information and your hard work. And I appreciate you coming each month.
Well, thank you. And on behalf of the whole team, because it's not just me, we really appreciate the support and your insight to have capacity building so that people can do this work on their own over time with some supports continuing. So thank you so much.
All right. So moving into new business, Lynn has sharpened her pencil and worked on the 2027 budgets. So I'm going to turn it over to her. In your packet, she did have a few things that she had kind of done some updates on, but I will let her highlight those to us all now.
So actually, I should probably let, if you all have questions, maybe we should start there. But I want to say that a lot of my time is spent dealing with how unique you all are as a government entity and and the implications of that and explaining it to others. And then on the other side of that, the DD board is even more unique. So anyway, just when we're doing budget stuff, that is a major factor. And so there are lots of things in here where you're just different from everybody else. And this is how I'm navigating that. Okay. So, do you all have questions to start with?
Okay, on page 4. And this is just kind of a history lesson for me. I'm sorry if it's too far in the weeds, but the expo used to make money. And why doesn't it now?
because it's not functioning right now. We had, for years and years, the expo was run by consultants who would aggressively seek sponsorships. We don't. One of them passed away, and the other two resigned due to medical issues. So we don't have anybody, you know, banging on doors and demanding sponsorships. I think the most that I have ever seen of the combined sponsorship funds and then the exhibitor fees, which for a nonprofit were $50 a booth, was $24,000 in 1 year. I don't think we've been quite that high for a long time. But at the same time, we're not paying any consultants right now to do the work. So we do have some expo ideas and some expo activities that people have already talked about that we will spend money on. But
I want to be very clear, that wasn't a criticism.
Oh.
That was just a me trying to understand the budget and the history of the budget a little bit.
I just feel like it was hard to say no to those three people.
Okay.
So they raised a lot of money.
I mean, that's wonderful, but it also, things happen. And then what are transfers in?
Oh, transfers in, it's very straightforwardly from other departments or other units. The Mental Health Board always has a transfer in from the Developmental Disabilities Board, but I think we separate that out in the budget description so you can see it. And that's just their share of, CCDDB revenue. That's their share of administrative costs per the original agreement.
Okay.
And then the other transfers in will be, a long time ago, the county transferred a bunch of money for ARPA that this board used over two different years, but it was transferred in 1 year. And then this, what I'm going to ask you all today is whether we could do a transfer in from the Special Initiatives Fund at the very end of this year, as late as we can get in 2026, so that we can take everything that's left in that fund after the trust fund is exhausted and split it between the two boards, which is also described in the intergovernmental agreement. You have lots of other collaborations. You don't need this fund to collaborate. This fund was designed because the Mental Health Board has some unique statutory authorities and the DD Board has different unique statutory authorities, which allowed them together to purchase and maintain houses. So we don't need to have it separated anymore, but it might be nice to just put a little bit more into each board's fund balance for future survival. So,
thank you.
Could you, I know on page 63 it mentions, and I know we talked a bit about this, I asked you, or you explained to me, the changes to expense categories, especially regarding professional services, operational services, and outside services. Would you mind just kind of explaining, because I remember one of those numbers especially like went way up, but that's because of this recategorization.
And some of this is stuff that, like, I'm the last person to get the news about this kind of thing. But for years and years and years, at the end of the year, actually, like in February, the county just charges us for a certain set of services that were delivered in the prior year. And related to another update I want to share with you, they use a formula that is projected revenues compared across all funds. And it's very fair when you're talking about liability risk, portions of software licensing. But then for some of the services, it's actually based on the service. So for financial services, which used to be the auditor's offices, and now it's the finance department, we pay a share based on how many transactions we had compared to everybody else's transactions. So that's also a fair formula, but it's different and no one can predict it. And I was just charging it to professional services as it had always been for years and years and years, and I didn't know that they changed it. They wanted us to be charging it to operational services, which, here's where you're unique. Technically for you, that would be outside services because you're purchasing them from a different entity. But they wanted in operational services, and I am not going to argue. it really just matters that we have enough money budgeted somewhere. So that's why you see a huge jump in operational services. It's not a new cost. There has been an increase in that cost, but as everybody here knows, financial services are very expensive. We are still paying for our portion of the external audit, which is based on that formula I mentioned earlier. That comes out of professional services. So I'm just trying to keep up with these changes that they all are making are in the name of best practices in government accounting. So it's a no-brainer. It's just that I don't always know what's going on. So the changes might look startling if you don't know that they're just technical replace. So there's still a lot of money left in the professional services line, but now, and there's a description on one of these pages of the things we expect to put in there. That would include, if y'all continue doing an evaluation capacity project, this one expires, it's over on the end of April next year. So if you want to continue doing that, that's a big piece of it. And then we put all these other, like our websites, and this year we did a lot of that because of accessibility changes, and then the people who are advising us on accessibility changes, and then a CPA who reads all these audits with us, and that's great because it lets us know if we got it right. So those are sort of, there's also nothing really new in there, except I left some money in there for possible consultants to support some kind of expo or anti-stigma events that we have not defined yet. Anyway, so I'm talking too much. I'm sorry. Is that?
You did answer my question. I did have one additional question, which was about the insurance, the non-payroll insurance that I understand right. that went up quite a bit.
And yeah.
Would you be able to speak to that at all?
It's a one-time charge. I don't know what we can expect in the future, but in 2027, we will pay for 2026 costs. The county covered it for 2025. So when I first saw the number, I was quite surprised. It's like $37,550 for health reimbursement arrangements for our staff. And that was using that formula that I mentioned, which is revenue share based, not employee based. So it didn't look very fair to me at first. If the county only had 100 employees, then it would look fair that our six are costing that much money. But when I think about it, I kind of zoomed out. I've thought about all the other ways that they could calculate it. Everything is complicated. Our department is so simple because we are fortunate to have the same six people for years and not having to add people or hold positions or any of those things which can make having a consistent formula impossible. So when I thought about this is for 2 years, and if I look at it that way, the actual cost is $3,129 per person, and that's not terrible. So I thought, well, you know, I asked them to reconsider this charge. They are, but I don't know what I can't figure out a better way that they could do it. This is not going to happen again. What happens next could be horrible because it's just health insurance projections that are 30 to 60%. Increases. So we're going to end up having some new kind of unprecedented health insurance costs in the budget, but we don't know yet what they are or where they are. So this thing, because this is once, I feel like, okay, maybe I shouldn't freak out too much about this. Yeah.
And we all noted that on page 5, the health insurance has gone up almost double from last year, which I'm very happy that you all have health insurance. That's not the point. It's an alarming rate of increase.
And I think if the way that this particular category has like gone up is partly to like compensate for like them covering it last year, but it's almost like a placeholder for how much it will go up in the future also.
Thank you. That's a really healthy way to look at it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's healthy.
Just the difference when you're looking at 2026 projected or prior actual, the difference between that and budgeted is actually not a health insurance cost increase, but we have at least two staff who don't take the insurance, but we have to continue budgeting for the event that they do. So we have, because of that, every year we end up with lower personnel costs than we expect. But, you know, people actually do sometimes take different jobs or change their choices of insurance. So that also prepares us for potentially higher costs.
Well, and it's better to budget it than to find out we're in an oh-no situation. So I think it's good to, unfortunately, budget it, even though it looks kind of ouchy. Yeah. Any other questions for the budget, which this is tentative because you still have to meet with people.
Okay. You are unique in the sense that you and the DD board each have authority over your own budgets, but the county board has the authority to say yay or nay to the whole thing. So you don't want to present them something that they can't live with. So I'll get some feedback from county staff and county board in late August, which might change this. But I think usually what changes is we get changes in the projected revenue. And then I almost always have good news to bring back to you later in the summer or fall. And then changes in the staff costs almost always. So it's not tentative. I'm really asking for your approval of this first version, but just with all of us knowing that there's almost no doubt there will be a second version. Yeah.
So I had a question about employee development. How is it different from? I can tell it's really different from conferences and training. What exactly is employee development? I also see recognition as the slash, so I just wanted to ask about that.
It's, despite y'all having like different rules, and it would be okay for us to have like maybe a dinner celebration of someone's retirement or anniversary, because that's not typically done elsewhere in the county, we don't do that. So we've kind of got it down to we could buy a plaque for someone, and everyone already like either has plaques or they don't want them. So we haven't done very much of that. So almost every year we don't spend this. But someday someone's going to retire and I'm going to have to get them a plaque, whether they like it or not.
Okay, I had one more question, or at least I hope it's one more, because I've got a lot of them answered already so far. That one was answered. Okay, I also wanted to note that your non-employee conferences / trainings, that's really cool. I did not know that was a thing. So I think that's it. Everything's been answered so far. And whoever did this, as I was writing down questions, they all got answered down the line. So that was really cool. That's it.
Well, that's cool. I'll tell you the bad news is that this format, the format of the budgets and the background information is not fully ADA compliant. So I was like, just in the knowledge that it's not quite required, I went with it, but I think I'm going to have to use a different program next year.
I thought you were going to say it was like AI made it, so I am happy with that. You're good. We're good.
Not a fun topic to discuss, but I think overall, like you said, because the questions were answered, it made it a little bit easier to understand and accept. Anyone have any other questions, comments, concerns? If not, I believe on page 64 are the three potential motions we have in regards to the budget. If anyone would like to make a motion or if there's any more conversation.
I am comfortable starting with motions, and obviously there can be more conversation. So I will start by moving to approve the attached draft 2027 CCMHB budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $7,607,177.
I second.
Roll call, please.
Dan Ares.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes.
Kyle Patterson.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Jim Straub.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Jane Sprandl.
Yes.
Well, it seems kind of nonsense to ask you the second one before asking you the third one. I'm sorry.
A minor typo. So the third one, we're going to make our second. Does anyone have any questions or anything about the special initiatives? I don't want to call it changes, but changes of balances.
I guess, so my question is, given what was just said about the ordering of this, essentially, if we do it in this order, we're approving the budget and then we're amending the approved budget?
No, you would be approving the attached 2027 budget, and then you'd be amending the current budget, which I can't just take that money out of there without your approval, the DD board's approval, and the county board's approval.
So. Oh, and it would only be anticipated revenues and expenditures of zero if we approve the other thing first. Okay. Well,
yeah, I'm so sorry. I didn't even think of that when I was.
I'll go ahead and move to do the third one, which is to approve amending the 2026 IDD Special Initiatives and CCMHB fund budgets to transfer the remaining IDD SI fund balance in equal amounts to the CCMHB and CCDDB funds at the end of 2026. Use of this fund is consistent with the terms of the intergovernmental agreement between CCDDB and CCMHB, and full approval is contingent on CCDDB action.
I second.
Thank you. Can I have a roll call, please?
Oh, wait, 1 second. I just wanted to add one more thing to the intergovernmental agreement. There is a part in page 74 of the packet, not sure what page it is, of the intergovernment agreement, but on the parties agreed to the following financial commitments, number 5, there is a part there that says disabilities senesis, and I wasn't sure if this meant to say that. I looked it up.
Okay. This PDF, in order to make this PDF accessible, I had to convert it to Word, and I missed that. So Word read it wrong.
Yes, Word read it wrong. I agree.
Yes. Thank you for noticing that.
And then also to the addendum. In the addendum part where it says number 4 and number 5, it does say GILA fund budget, and I don't know if it was meant to say CILA. Word. Look at Word. Word.
This is why I love all the proofreaders in the group, because like I'm just like, yep, looks good.
And now we can roll call. I think I don't even have to motion for
So yes, we can do roll call on the said motion in regards to the 2026 amending.
Molly McClay?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Jen Straub?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Dan Ares?
Yes.
Jane Sprandl?
Yes. If there is no other conversation, I will make a motion to approve the attached draft 2027 IDD Special Initiatives Fund budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $0. Use of this fund is consistent with the terms of the intergovernmental agreement between the CCDDB and the CCMHB, and full approval is contingent on CCDDB action.
I will second.
All right. Thank you. Roll call, please.
Kyle Patterson.
Yes.
Elaine Palencia.
Yes.
Jen Straub.
Yes.
John Paul Joachim.
Yes.
Den Ares.
Yes.
Molly McClay.
Yes.
Jane Sprandl.
Yes.
Thank you all.
Wonderful. Thank you. So moving on to item B, the draft for the RFP for evaluation capacity building project. Information for that is found on pages 79 through 102. Lynn, is there anything you'd like to kind of update us on?
I've talked myself into a stupor. I think this is, I learned from one of our attorneys that we should not have agreements that go on for longer than 4 years. So this is, when we did an RFP to replace the earliest evaluation capacity project, it had a 2-year contract and then an option to simply renew for 2 years. So this, because that's the end of that is April 31st. This is that April 30th. Wow, that's weird. I want there to be an April 31st. So anyway, this is an RFP, a draft RFP for you to consider, and then the DD board also needs to consider it, that we would release on the timeline that's described in there. I think it's August. By August 21st, we would release it, and the ways that we would release it, and then there's a timeline with all the steps. It's very similar to the original RFP that we issued a few years ago, and it would hopefully keep us on track to just pick up, like, on April 31st or May 1st, whichever you like better. And then there's even the notification of bid process is included here so that you can see what that will look like. Anyway, I think I sent it out to everybody a long time ago to look at and have had some good conversations about it. So.
Well, I just want to say that I think we have the option to say, no, we don't want to do an RFP. And I think we should, because I think promoting an evaluation capacity building with the programs that we fund is very important. I think there's been a lot of great progress that has happened over the last several years of this current project and the one previously. And I definitely support, having another RFP as legally advised and continuing this work.
I remember from a long time ago how hard it was to get information from agencies because they didn't know what they had or how to get it. and so we had trouble funding because we weren't sure how many people or all kinds of things. So I think this has been really useful.
We're always encouraging agencies to diversify their funding, and the kind of work that this program is doing with them as far as telling stories with data, that kind of thing, is exactly what they need in order to go after a lot of that other funding. And so I can't say enough good things about this.
So this is not necessarily because another agency is needed, right? This is because we just need to renew the RF. Okay. Thank you. That's my biggest.
Yeah, so I think we've actually gotten a lot of great value out of this. You know, like Elaine said, you know, we're getting better information on the grant request and things like that. And then the fact that it sounds like these agencies who are using these resources are starting to kind of fly a little bit more on their own, and then they're telling other agencies, hey, look at this, you know, learning opportunity. So I just really think it's not only are we helping our agencies that we're funding, I don't want to use the word inadvertently, but I think that's kind of the word I'm looking for, helping other agencies that maybe are not getting funded by us, which in the end helps our whole county. So, I think overall everyone likes this idea. So if we can just get a motion to
get it out for approval.
I motion to approve the attached request for proposals evaluation capacity building project for the County of Champaign.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Very good. Thank you. So the next item of new business found on pages 103 through 112 is setting the stage for 2027 and program year 2028. Oh my gosh, it just seems like that's a long ways away, but it's not. Lynn, take it away.
This is my favorite time of the year for our work because I get to live in three different years at once, even four different years at once. But it does feel too early to be talking about, like, what could we improve with the funding priorities? Because you just did that, and you just awarded contracts under that set of priorities. It feels soon to know what could be better, but pretty soon you're going to have results from the last round. And that will help us a lot. So this memo, you don't have to do anything about it, but it's just to kind of explain where we're at, what we're going to do next, and then, you know, kind of just some basic summaries of it. I have some opinions about moving forward, but they're not in here. So, like, you'll get those later. But the most important thing is that you all might have opinions and then you could share them with me. It doesn't have to be during a board meeting. Just we can put together people's ideas and present them starting in the fall. So, okay.
All right. Very good. So if there's no other thoughts on that, but I love Lynn's idea of looking into the future. And if, you know, again, we're in an ever-changing world, and so of course our priorities and things like that might have to change as we evolve. So in your packet we also have our wonderful, as always, staff.
I did have a comment on the last one. I just wanted to say that I in some ways it is kind of a good idea to talk about what worked with the last priorities and what didn't now, or now-ish, maybe not that much tonight, but because we might have a more direct, immediate memory as to, you know, what maybe we needed to change. But I also understand we're exhausted from that process, and it seems like even though we had a month off, it maybe wasn't enough. So I just wanted to add that, but I think, you know, for my part, I will be looking more into this and providing feedback over time, but not really much today.
Okay, so staff reports are on pages 113 through 126. Like I was saying, you know, very thorough, and our staff is always so very busy. Anyone have any specific questions or need any clarification?
I really enjoyed the format of Stephanie's report, and all of the different resources provided were just really cool. I think it was kind of a palate cleanser at the end of a really long packet. It was like, oh, this is so digestible. So good job, Stephanie. Thank you.
This isn't a question, but it's a comment. But I noticed on page 126, also on Stephanie's report, that Promise Healthcare submitted their audit on June 30th, 2026. So they were on time for a second year in a row. Yay.
I finished reviewing it and sent my notes to Chris, but we have an independent CPA who's also looking at it. So I had no issues. So that was kind of cool. Can I tell you something from my staff report? I'm going to tell you. I'm just so excited about this. The NACO, like in the NACO section, is the very last section of this. I was involved with sponsoring two policy resolutions. One was just renewing the one where we want the federal government to treat direct support professionals differently from other professions, so, because we know that so much is expected of them and they're not paid for it. And it's very hard to do anything about that without data. So that passed, yay. So that's now part of NACO's platform. And then I got involved sort of by accident, like with just one of those like kind of out in the hallway comforting my colleague over the mean things people said about her resolution because it had the word gun in it back in February. So I worked with her on a different version which focused on safety, and that passed too. So yay.
The community behavioral health needs assessment activities are on page 127 through 130. Lynn, were you at this meeting? I can't remember. No, I think I might have missed this one. I'm not sure.
Well, it was a great one, as you can see.
All right. And then our other one was anti-stigma projects on 131 through 134. Again, kind of much like the Disability Expo, you know, we got some stuff still brewing there. We're doing some talking. Lynn and I have done a little brainstorming via some email of things we could do for anti-stigma projects. Lynn, I'll kind of let you give a recap. But again, this is one of those just not sure where we're going, but it's definitely something we do not want to end. So we have to kind of keep it going.
I'm glad to hear that because that's one of the questions at the end. There's two decisions requested of you, and the DD board will also vote on these. But basically, like with the loss of the large in-person expo, and all the people who supported the large in-person expo, I don't really know what our opportunities are right now. So our staff are actively involved in planning three things in the fall, one in August, one in September, and one in October. They have a real different focus, but we're doing those, and we're also trying to make sure that we're taking that resource book and representing all of the programs that we know about at other resource fairs as practical. And there's a small group of people helping us to do that. So those are things that we can do. We said a long time ago we would, and we are. So there's some detail about that. And then another thing that keeps coming up is people really like the paper resource book and the Disability Expo website. And so maintaining those is, you know, we need a person to do that. So I've been talking to a person with whom we might contract to update the book so we can release a book in early 2027 maybe, and then update the website. Both of the websites have been under construction for ADA compliance issues, but they also both need some like revisions to update them. So those are things that seem really easy to do, but we still have to have a budget and some direction. And meanwhile, people are coming up with all kinds of really cool ideas. And so I need to kind of structure how we talk about those and if anything looks possible or is, you know, the right next move, like mini expos is one thing that has come up. So anyway, the budget includes enough leeway in all the places that we have used before to support the expo and the anti-stigma event, but it's formless right now. So this is asking you to tell me that we should continue doing things like that. And then the second one is like our kind of, the first decision is our surprise decision. It's kind of, we were sort of liking the idea of having an annual Be Like Barb award. So.
Any questions or comments on any of those? I had asked, because in the motion it talks about cost not to exceed budgeted amounts. So I asked what those budgeted amounts were. And correct me if I'm wrong. Like Lynn said, that it's probably around like no more than $200 for that Barb Bresner thing, and that would come out of the fund that we have earmarked for staff recognition.
That employee recognition award, like I I mean, if we're going to buy a plaque, it's coming out of that. I would love it if we could just give people a cash award. It would be neat if it was even more than $200. But there are some barriers to doing a cash award. I think if we were going to do an annual recognition award, we'd also want to have a nomination process and some parameters to that and do that publicly. And that could be really fun and positive. So.
Which then leads to the second one, which also not to exceed a budgeted amount. Because we haven't fully formed these yet, budget amounts have not been set yet. Okay. So that would be no more than 15,000 because that's what we did for Ebert Fest.
There's 15,000 for like that was a film sponsorship. It could also be used for to pay for booths and others, us sponsoring other things. I just left that amount in there. And then we have had to put expo costs in the lines for advertising and professional services and uniforms and non-food supplies and food supplies. Because when you're having an event, if you have food, you have to put it in those categories. You can't just say it's expo. So those amounts, the amounts that you just approved are based on actual amounts from last year, which covered the cost of an in-person. So the amounts are there. Defining where they go is yet to happen, and that's typically my job. So
is that clear as mud?
For the second, planning and implementing the anti-stigma events, what is the staff capacity for that at this time?
Well, we're really enjoying a year free of implementing the expo, which like every day we'd be processing checks. You get a check for $50, three different staff people have to do a thing with it. Finance department has to do something with it. Treasurer's office has to do something with it. It's hardly worth $50. So I'm kind of loving the break, but we do have time. We have interest. We often have input from volunteers, from students, from the steering committee. And then there's so Expo has a whole steering committee and an advisory committee, and then AIR has members. So everybody has ideas, too. So, like, we wouldn't be alone. I'd be, like, figuring out what is practical for us to do and who can do it for us. So
I just want to clarify that that's not because I think that you can't do it. It's just I just recognize that you are all very busy. Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a conversation for another day, but when you're talking about anti-stigma ideas, every time I go in a public building, I push the door thing to open the door, and you would be surprised how many buildings are non-compliant, including the post office on Mattis. I've spoken to them about that. If you were in a wheelchair, you could not go mail anything. And they said, well, you ought to write your congressperson or something, you know, and they were redoing the building at that time and would not. So, but that happens to me all the time, you know, a Hilton Hotel in St. Louis last weekend. You could get in the front door, but you couldn't get anywhere else. And, you know, so just saying that wouldn't cost a lot of money to a campaign and to just have a list. I've been on university campuses where, oh, you can't get in this building. You can get in most of them, but not this one. So, and it's not even that it's broken. There's nothing there, you know. So just saying when you're getting ideas of what to do about that. So that's why I even test this building every time I come in, you know.
I have a question, but especially before we vote on the first motion, could like Lynn and or Jane, you share a little bit more about Barb Reznor and who she was and what she meant? Because I know not all board members have the same like amount of contact knowledge, and even not all community members. I know I never met Barb, so I was wondering if you could just share a little bit more about her so we know who we're recognizing. If this is like a question that is just, you know, something I need to know, but I think not everybody in the room or online may know much about her.
Well, she was the architect of the first expo through like, I don't know, number 10. Like she just, I don't know, Leon, if you share this impression, people did not say no to Barb. So, and this was, she was very motivated to make this happen. It started as a developmental disabilities fair, and then it expanded into any support needs. And she was just really good at that. And we had way too many steering committee meetings. They went on forever, and they repeated the information of every subcommittee meeting. You know this. But it was, you know, Barb being really thorough and making sure nobody said no to her ever. So then, but then, you know, because of, you know, she had retired from the state, so she was on a very, you know, kind of limited consultant contract. And then a certain, and she put all kinds of time into it beyond the contract. But at a certain point, you know, the desire to spend time with her family and an illness, you know, caused her to step down from that role. And then we hired some young people who had been involved for years, and they did a great job. And then last year, the problems were just too many here and for them to overcome, like when we lost the venue, or you know, a month before the event, someone got killed in front of Marketplace, and now we're thinking, oh no, we can't ask people to roll up to Marketplace, and they couldn't take the bus there anymore either. So it was just too much to do without any coordinators. But Barb would have figured it out, and she was still trying to help us figure all of that out, and her illness came back. And she went into the hospital just, I think, for treatment and did not come out. So
at this time, there's nothing established, like how someone would be honored with this award. That's something that we would have, like, a small committee, and there would be a way to judge, you know, and so that. But, I mean, that is a good way to put it. You know, Barb, people didn't say no to her, but I think just she overcame any physical disabilities or adversities that she had in her life, and she just overcame them. And so I kind of see, you know, like we talk about the Dave Benton Award, you know, I didn't ever physically meet Dave Benton, but I knew he was just a crusader for doing things. And that's just how Barb was. She didn't let any of her disabilities hinder what she was going to do to help others, promote others, and things like that. And so I think, obviously, if we decide to move forward with this, there would be like a committee would say, you know, what are some of her qualities? And that's how I almost envision this. Let's have a little bit of iced tea and talk, okay, what are some of her qualities? And then, you know, we're looking for people who have these qualities or whatever. And then again, you know, what kind of award do we give someone? I mean, some people would be thrilled to have a plaque. Other people would be like, oh my gosh, you gave me $250, you know, and I'm just doing my job, you know. So I think that's just kind of, so I think the motion is just to say, can we start a plan towards this? We don't have all the particulars quite yet. Would anyone like to make a motion?
Sure. I will go ahead and move to approve establishing an annual recognition award in memory of Barbara Bresner with any associated costs not to exceed budgeted amounts.
I second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
We need roll call because it's about money.
Since we don't know okay, Leah. All right.
The budget's already been approved, and there is no specific amount mentioned here, so no.
Okay. Okay. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. All right. I'll make a motion to authorize the CCDDB and CCMHB executive director and staff to plan and implement anti-stigma events during 2027, not to exceed budgeted amounts.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. All right. Thank you. So now we have gotten to the point where we have another opportunity for public participation or agency input. If there's anyone who would like to address the board, please put it in the Zoom messages there.
I would ask them to raise hands. You guys might not know it, but the chat is not very accessible.
All right. If there are no public participation agency input, we will move on to board-to-board reports. I don't know if anyone has been to a recent meeting. Again, the board-to-board liaison options are on page 135. If there's anything that anyone is interested of. I did go to Community Coalition this past month. I did not see my friend Elaine there, but I was looking for her. So I'm glad I was there. Again, it had been some time since I had been there, and I was, very glad to be there because I've had some concerns, and I've kind of asked Lynn, what can we do with some of the stuff they do? And she said, why don't you go to Community Coalition and maybe some of the folks you're looking for, you might find some answers there. County Board report. Do you have anything, Din?
I do, actually. So there was a resolution that passed at the June 18th, 2026 full board meeting. And it's for establishing a reentry council. This would be something that I would hope more community-based social service providers and community members with reentry experience and or experience in the criminal justice system will participate in, because there is a laundry list of other people that can participate, all having to do with law enforcement. And I think we all understand that a reentry council might be better with people who are more experienced in helping. So just for anyone's knowledge.
Excellent. Thank you very much. The DD board did not meet this week, so they will meet next week. Do you have anything to share from them, Lynn? Okay. Any board announcements or any other input? All right. If no one has anything else,
There's a tentative meeting in August, so y'all can decide if you want to keep that or not. What we have typically done if we don't have a meeting in August is it gives us a little bit more time to focus on the updated priorities and the updated objectives for 3-year plan.
Sorry, I missed that. Does anyone have a feeling one way or the other on having a meeting on August 19th? It doesn't sound like Lynn has anything that we have to vote on or anything like that.
I'd rather use those staff hours towards the goals of the board than to create another meeting that is unnecessary.
I agree,
and that gives a couple folks in the room another evening to spend with their children before they head back to school. It'll be here before we know it. So unless anyone has any reason why we cannot cancel the August 19th, I make a recommendation we cancel the August 19th meeting, and we will see each other again on September 23rd at 5:45 here in this room. No other conversation. I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Excuse me.